and
won't even make a reference to how you're going to have to get used to drinking from the cheap shit.
Pay for myself. Though my brother-in-law did ring me from duty free today, saying, "What would you like me to bring you back in a liter bottle?" I'm like, "But that's not attitude. You can bring back whatever you like." He quite likes to come around and drink my whiskey. So.
D-Strike.
Well, this week somewhat went how I expected and somewhat didn't go how I expected. How did you find these three albums? Where would you like to begin?
I found them by opening Spotify and going to our playlist, which you can find linked in the show notes of any episode you'd like.
Oh, wow, Tripping Balls, so professional.
Tripping Balls, a music podcast, which is what this is. I'm Doc, he's Bezo. We generally review new music unless Bezo gets the year wrong, in which case we review albums that are a year old.
Yep.
Because they've just released a deluxe edition. Should we knock that one off first, just to address it?
Muse for beginners? Muse light? Alcohol-free Muse? How would you like me to put it? Well, I really like the album. I thought it was quite pleasant, yeah, but it's Muse for beginners. Right?
Well, Fisher Price, my first Muse. I kind of went a different way. I sort of said, if you told me this was the next Raw Blood album, I'd have shrugged and said, fine.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's sort of like...
It might be more of a comment
that's going
on
in the opposite direction, right?
It might be more of a comment on Raw Blood's evolution, but it does feel within the kind of the fringe case of where they end up, particularly the last track. I think it passes the basic Tripping Balls test of, is this worth listening to? It's not the album of the week, but it's fine. I'm not sure how you would get so enthused about it that you'd be going around evangelizing it to people, but you know,
well,
people are weird.
I can see why, because that both those people love Royal Blood and love Muse. To me, the thing I like about Muse is it's got a sprinkling of batshit crazy about it, and this had none of that. Like, it was pretty straight down the line.
It was cookie cutter. It feels like criticism, and there isn't anything in here that's obnoxious enough to criticise. Track one, I did enjoy that had such strong 90s Eurobeat, you know?
Yeah.
This is the rhythm of the night kind of shit.
There was some lovely synths and stuff in it. Yeah.
What's interesting is that one of the deluxe album editions, you know, the stuff that they've released as part of the 2024 re-release, turned up on my release radar, and it was better than anything else on the original album.
Oh, really?
It was quite... Yeah, I was like, who's this? This isn't too bad. I looked and went, oh, it's the deluxe edition of that album. So I guess that's not a shining endorsement of the production team's powers of selection when they originally decided on which tracks were going to be on the first version of the album. But it was number one in Britain, like, so, you know, what do you want?
Yeah, this sounds like an album, like a third album, where the record company is like, okay, well, this is going to be the single, and this will be the second track, you know, this will be the follow-up track, and, you know, and we want this and this song on the album because these, you know, this fits in. It sounded like a record company album.
We don't get those anymore.
What's the point, right? It's not really record companies in the same way that we knew them, and the way people disperse and listen to music is just not the same.
Having said that, they are on pretty much the biggest record label in the history of the world, Sony Music Entertainment UK Limited. So, you know, if anyone was still going to pretend that record labels existed, it would be the people who, you know, made George Michael release Freedom.
I still have a guy, a somewhat mate of mine that's still works for EMI. Music. I should, you know, send him a text and ask him if the corporate structure of record companies is the same as it was a decade ago. That would actually be an interesting thing to know, because I would imagine that it just wouldn't be, right? Like,
oh, they would have lost they would have lost a lot of middle management.
Yeah, and like, you know, a huge part of his week used to be dealing with the big three, and then the sort of minor. You know, the minor satellite radio stations of Brisbane. Like, that was a huge chunk of his week.
Yeah.
And was, like, if the person in his job did his job well, it made a real difference to an artist, to the point where, you know, some of those indie artists that were Triple J adjacent, like even the 4ZZZ or, like, just squeezing it onto the edge of the playlist on Nova and opening up the amount of people, but also the demographic of people that were listening to a track. You know, his work made real difference to artists' lives, but I just don't know whether that would be the case anymore.
Well, they just aren't those gatekeepers. I'm sure radio still exists, and these people, you know, program directors still have to find music somewhere. But
yeah, but I think radio, because of what Spotify has come along, and Apple Music and all the other ones, has come along as an outlet, is it's allowed them to wallow in nostalgia for a lot longer than they used to. Like, I know they always played, you know, particularly Triple M played a fair chunk of older music, but I think it's taken away any urgency for them to do anything radical at all.
Yeah, because they used to oscillate, you know, Triple M would oscillate between having a much more contemporary alternative-edged playlist and then something that was much more of a, no, now we're just, you know, we're just doing a non-stop block of cock rock kind of, you know, just mostly
AC/DC culture, yeah, back-to-back.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. And it sort of depends how they were doing in the ratings, whether the program director would decide to lurch one way or the other. Yeah. Well, the same story over here. I mean, Radio Holdacky for a while was quite alternative, and then it became, you know, much less, you know, much more like a clone of The Rock, which is the Triple M equivalent over here.
Yeah. So, like, put this on at dinner tonight. We had a little birthday dinner for Vanessa. She's like, oh, this is really cool. I quite like this. You know, who are these guys? And I'm like,
you sound like you were thinking, fuck.
No.
I really wish my wife had a better choice.
No, but she likes Muse and Raw Blood as well. And if you don't listen to music,
you say Muse and Raw Blood to me, I don't think of the same Muse and Raw Blood that perhaps your friends do. I think of when I think of Raw Blood, of Raw Blood's first album, which fucking rocked, but was dark. It was much more like in common with Queens of the Stone Age and Desert Rock than anything that Muse ever did.
This has no darkness at all, does it? It's so light and fluffy. There's no.
Well, it has kind of sad feelings, but not darkness.
No.
Hell, the darkness has more darkness than this. But it kind of tells you that there's a huge market for a less scary version of Raw Blood or any of those kinds of that kind of sound.
Yeah.
You know, and as we said last year, there were quite a few of those bands that, like, Raw Blood, Tiger Cub, D-Mob Happy, even Queens of the Stone Age themselves dropped, you know, that kind of dark gothic rock kind of feel. There are certainly elements of that in this. But there is also quite a lot of just fairly generic pop. And that's fine, because pop, the first three letters of pop are pop. The first three letters of popular are pop. I'm just going to keep saying pop, because now the word pop doesn't mean anything to me. You know, when you just focus on a word and it just loses all meaning, and just thinking pop.
So,
you know who's not pop?
I really like the last the Black Keys. Well, let's go to the Black Keys first.
Yeah.
Again,
which one was the last Black Keys? I can't remember. Was that this band has been around for 24 years, so you know they've released a lot. The funny thing is, it was the first time I'd seen Black Keys on Bandcamp, because I think they're releasing this on their own label, and so they've got their first two albums and this album on Bandcamp. And one of the reviews I saw for this on Bandcamp was someone just ripping in it, saying they used to do strip back rock and roll. What the fuck is this? These guys have gone soft. If you like this, you're an imbecile or something. And then the next review was like, well, apparently I'm an imbecile. I don't even know what that is, and I've never heard of this band before, but I thought it was quite cool.
Dropout Boogie was the last
Dropout
one.
Boogie, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a bit of a boogie album, right? It had that, and
I don't have a clear memory of Dropout Boogie, but I think I liked it. But, you know, it wasn't, I don't think it was in my top five. I think literally right. I don't think it's in my top five of Black Keys albums.
Hard to push El Camino and things like that out.
Look, I'm not even sure El Camino's in my top five, because, you know, my top five is like Thick Freakness and Rubber Factory and the shit, like the early shit, because that was absolutely my stuff. But, like, I'm working on a theory that the default state for all two pieces is to start out doing distorted, stripped-back blues rock and end up doing disco. Because it happened to The Kills, it happened to Raw Blood, it kind of happened to The White Stripes, although, you know, their last album was a piano album before they went tits up, and it certainly has happened to Black Keys.
Yeah, disco.
I mean, there's on the cover, there is an extremely disco-looking fucking bowling alley kind of thing. And I think this is a judge the album by its cover kind of situation, because it is hugely imbued with 60s funk, soul, R&B, pop, 60s pop. There's quite a lot of that sort of stuff. Yeah, this is not another Thick Freakness.
Yeah, 60s pop is, like, I was sort of struggling to get the frame of reference, and like, I thought this album was, like, almost a little bit more romantic in that Happy Days sort of romance sort of way.
It's more love songs.
And I was like, oh, what does this remind me of? And I sort of settled on the Black Sorrows, and it actually sounds nothing like the Black Sorrows. The Black Sorrows are a very different thing at all. But
it has some of the same words.
Yeah, that's true. But I think it's that attitude of the I don't know. Yeah, I just can't get the word romantic out of my head. The way that it sort of influences the sound. The sound is not as raw, as not as...
Oh, it's definitely not as raw. It's much more produced.
Yeah, and like they were always, you know, really big on replicating the sound through the equipment to keep that rawness in, and this does not sound like that at all. This sounds like they've just discovered a whole, you know, like they've fallen in love with a whole heap of new microphones or something that gives them a much clearer sound.
Yeah, but, you know, they've done this before. I mean, it was like I was thinking of the dude who was upset that it doesn't sound like, you know, Thick Freakness. And I'm like, you're going to be really upset when you discover the album that Danger Mouse fucked with in 2008 or whatever it was that they did Attack and Release. So they go through these sorts of periods. And of course, Auerbach has been doing a lot of stuff like Aaron Fraser and acts like that recently as a producer and as with the record label. So I feel like some of that is imbued
probably
what
filtering
they're doing
through into his songwriting.
Well, or at least filtering through into, and he's also, you know, he had that Arcs album relatively recently, which is his essentially his solo band, separate from Patrick Carney. And this certainly felt more, and parts of this felt more like Arcs stuff than Black Keys stuff. But there were still Black Keys songs in here, even if the production wasn't as reminiscent. It's certainly more reminiscent of later Black Keys, sort of post El Camino Black Keys, Dropout Boogie Back Black Keys.
I think at this stage you just sort of go, oh, okay, that's what you wanted to do this time. Let's see what you do next time. Because I don't think they're in the stage where they're never going to do the same thing twice, right? They're going to fuck around and...
Yeah, and they're never going to do another Thick Freakness, so people just need to... You know, if you like Thick Freakness, go back and listen to Thick Freakness. If you like The Big Come Up, go back and listen to The Big Come Up. If you like Rubber Factory, go back and listen to Rubber Factory. If you like Attack and Release, why? It's terrible.
I should go back and listen to it. I probably like it.
It has one really good track on it, and then it has a lot of wombling about. Yeah, this is not my favorite album of theirs. It might not even be in the top five, but I like it enough. Actually, this is the album that I thought would be a Kitchen Vibes album. This is the kind of thing you put in the kitchen when you're cooking.
Like the boys are big Black Keys fans. I played it for them in the car.
Yeah, I imagine.
They seemed to like it. There was a few requests for it to be put on again. So, but I always, like with the boys, I always base how an album struck on the humming or the, you know, singing under the breath or even singing out loud. Like whether the songs latched into their little brains and they just go all around humming a riff or humming a chorus or singing a chorus, and there was none of that out of this album.
Probably didn't play it enough. There are only a couple of tracks that would do that. I think Beautiful People Stay High, Please Me Till I'm Satisfied, Live Till I Die, probably, you know.
Yeah.
The high points of this album are really good, but other stuff you kind of have to sit through.
Well, speaking of stuff you don't have to sit through, it's funny, the Bob Dylan album this week, I actually didn't listen to it late in the week till later in the week because I was a little bit apprehensive that it just was never going to be able to match up to that first.
Well, yeah, and then he opened with a limp Kendrick-style soliloquy about himself. And the first couple of tracks, he seems to be more concerned about the chart position of his last album and him getting robbed for the Mercury Prize by the British record industry. And I thought, oh, no. Oh, no. And then it took off like a Bob Dylan album. And it was like, what was that first quarter? That was like...
That was his therapy.
Well, that first GWS Giants Grand Final where they got lapped in the first quarter and could never catch up again. That was what this album was. It was like, can we just... can we just delete the first three songs from the fucking album? And you've got a, it's brilliant, but it's really hard to not to mark it against the previous album. And yeah, you kind of have to do that thing that I do when I think about Royal Blood, for example. Like, you heard the second album first, so the second album is your favourite. Whereas I always rate the second album poorer compared to the first because I heard the first album first. If you flip the order of these two, how would you feel about it? And I still think that the first album is better.
I still think the first album is going to stack up better.
Well, it's got that great Pretty Songs is such a great mission statement about, if you want to need one song to explain who Bob Villain are and who Bobby Villain is, Pretty Songs, it just explains exactly the whole fucking rationale for the band, for his political stances, the whole thing.
I was thinking about him in relation to Rage Against the Machine, and particularly once I got into like Dream Big, Hunger Games, He's a Man,
all the singles that were released over the last couple of years. So all the best songs on this album actually were released as singles over the last sort of 18 months. Dream Big, He's a Man. He's a Man is my favourite one because I love people dunking on fucking Brexity Jeremy Clarkson acolytes. Just fuck those guys forever. So he's just ripped them apart.
What made me think of actually was Curtis and I just watched the Beckham documentary recently, and all those teenage fuckwits that were like sitting in a pub or, you know, or in the street, you know, pimply faced white fucking boys going, oh, fucking, you know, Beckham cost us the World Cup. And it's like just this fucking dumb, straight down the line, yobbo, let's go and fucking party in Spain.
The sort of 45-year-old version of that.
That's what I'm saying. It's those kids that are basically arrested development into Brexit. Like, you can just see the through line, right? And then he's just so perfectly skewered.
The Euro 96 generation who learned the wrong things from it, you know, because that was the cool Britannia generation, you know, the ones who grew up through Britpop and Euro 96 being in Britain and all that kind of shit. And they learn all the wrong shit from it. And they think that was when Britain was great, so we need to go back to that. Even though the whole underpinnings of that, you know, the Cool Britannia period were not a very socialist Labour government, but a Labour government nonetheless, and, you know, not being fucking exclusionary cunts to people. It was much more embracing Europe.
Yeah. I almost feel like I need another month to sit down and go through the lyrics because there's just so many good little lines. Like, the dude can write a line.
Yeah, he can. And then he can complain about his fucking Mercury Prize, which was one of the worst lines I've ever heard anyone say. I was victim of one crime. Was it gun crime? No. Bob Villain got robbed for the Mercury. Like, fuck off, mate. You know, with the current state of Britain, with fucking, you know, people starving and, you know, the energy crisis and the cost of living crisis, you're worried that your album only went to 18. That album went to 18, but you know I'm number one. Fucking hell, man. A bit of fucking perspective. I shouldn't be needing to tell you this. You're usually good at this shit. You're the Zach De La Russia fucking 2024. Why do I need to explain to you not to fucking carry on like fucking Skepta or Stormzy or some cunt doing brag raps?
He almost needs a Bob Villain to come and release a track about Bob Villain talking about not getting high enough in the charts.
But the thing is that went so quickly. It was like he just did it and then just stopped it and then just went back to fucking, Hunger Games and just lancing people who needed it.
And the thing is, like, he has that, like, I don't think he's ever going to get the cut through that Rage has, because Rage had angry music to go with angry lyrics. And if you listen to his beats without his lyrics, they're actually quite catchy. Like, he's got quite catchy, beats.
But so did Rage Against the Machine. It was mostly just,
I know,
if you, took out the distortion and the shouting, and you got the black keys to record them, it's actually not different. They're basically just sort of blues progressions and funk progressions. I'm just thinking about Bulls on Parade. You could make a good funk song out of that.
That's true. All right, I'll retract that. But his wit, his lyricism is just
which is why I was like, so disappointed when he was doing fucking Woe Is Me.
In his feelings.
I didn't get fucking gobbed off at a fucking award ceremony.
The choice of the Fatboy Slim sample.
I don't know where that came from originally. I actually don't, I was trying to work out whether it was the original or whether it was a re-record, because there's no writing credit for anybody that I could identify.
No. It's. I just found it fascinating that he's using a very recognizable
yes
sample riff. It. I was waiting for the joke. And maybe the joke is hidden in there. Like, I was waiting for him to
maybe
just-
the joke is just the fact that he's claimed this extremely, you know, it wasn't the Fatboy Slim was commercial. It was just that generation commercialized that, you know, that kind of Brighton Beach rave culture kind of big show thing, yeah. Big dance music.
Yeah, it's just, I was just like, whoa, because, like, this was the one where I was like, I am not listening to this in the car. The first time I listen to this is going to be on the good headphones where I am not looking at another screen and I am listening
I'm
to the
lyrics. I'm paying attention. I might even have the little lyric thing up on Spotify to see if I understand what's going on.
So this is still easily still one of my favourite albums of this year so far.
Yeah, I find it difficult to reconcile with that week opening though. And I'm really going to have to think about that. Maybe I'll come to terms with it across the year, but at the moment I feel like that's going to be, it's a bit like, you know, it's carrying an injury. It's going to have to be, sort of have to carry that through into the postseason. The best way I can explain it is that my first listen to both of these albums was on Bandcamp Friday, and both of them were on Bandcamp, and I didn't go and press purchase on either. So make of that what you will. They're exactly the kind of bands and the kind of acts that I would tip a bit of money into their jar for, and I thought, nah, not yet. I'm not that into it.
Anyway, still a pretty damn good week.
Indeed. So good you get a week off.
Yeah, that's true. Do you want me to pick my albums now, or are you going to do your typical splice and dice with Adam?
Adam and I have picked some albums. So Adam has put forward the Danny Warhol's new album, and I've heard three songs from that. Two have been really good and one has been absolute shit. So it should be a Danny Warhol's album. And he also wants to pick the album by Tyler, not Tyler the Creator, not Tyler fucking, I don't know, Tyler Johnson, formerly of the Miami Heat, but Tyler, who is a pop starlet of some descript. I don't know why. I'm going to pick the new album by the Libertines. Because I'm as astonished as anybody else that the Libertines exist in 2024. I would have thought they would have disappeared in a cloud of fucking heroin and booze and pills sometime in 2005. But apparently they survived it. So the Libertines, as mentioned last week, they I kind of missed their moment of success because they were kind of a UK, kind of a British Strokes. And I didn't really think much of the Strokes, and I didn't think much of the Libertines either. But, yeah, I'll give that a crack and find out what it's like. And then the week after that, we'll pick something else.
I was just having a look. There's an old punk band. I was
trying to pad long enough for you to figure it out. Because I do have picks for the week after, because a whole lot of new albums just dropped.
I remember what I was going to pick, and it won't make you happy, so I should pick something else.
No, make me unhappy. It's funnier if I react on the podcast than if I react in the group chat and then have to tell people about it.
In the edit. All right, I'm gonna go Krungbin's new album.
Yeah, Krungbin.
Alasia.
Krungbin fans are usually pretty religious. Like, I don't mean the Hillsong. I mean, they are fucking Cast Iron, Rusted On.
It's a bit Dave Matthews Band-ish, I find.
Yeah, I reckon that's probably about right. Like, or Fish. Any kind of jam band.
Fish is the other one. Yeah, that's right.
I think we've talked about this before, but jam bands tend to attract a very the audience they get welded onto them. And they tend to be ex-musos.
But every now and again it comes up in one of my playlists, and I quite like their music, so But haven't we done one of their albums before and it didn't hang together as an album? It was a bit waffly.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. Yeah. And the problem I have with that band as a structure is that the girl who's the bass player, she's only in the band because the lead dude was trying to sift onto her in a really creepy way. And I don't like to see that rewarded with success. I mean, obviously, they're all still in a band together, but that's a really gross fucking
way to start it.
Yeah, it's just no thanks at all. The new album from West Thebberton has dropped, And I really liked their last album, which was a good 6 years ago now, West Thebeton. Formerly West Thebeton Brothel Club. Can't figure out why they dropped the name. And if you'll give me the joker, I have an album from Bodega, which is new, but it's not new. It's their latest album, and it's but it's actually them re-recording their first album for the label that they're on now, and they've reinvented it and changed some of the, you know, redone all the songs.
So they're not Taylor Swifting it. They're actually trying to do something interesting.
Kind of they are, but they're reinventing it. And I thought that I would like to hear that. Yeah. And I like one of the tracks on it that I've heard, but it's not. I mean, it has to be a joker because it's not really a new album. Or is it a new album? I mean, it becomes a bit of a difficult argument.
The thing, Dan from Hilltops released a solo album, a solo project thing that sort of like he did all the production, he did a little bit of the rapping, but it was a whole bunch of guest rappers in between their first and second Hilltop albums. Like this is sort of before they broke big, and like a lot of some of that early hip hop, like I absolutely love it, and I have no idea where my CD is and don't have it ripped to anywhere where I can listen to it. And so I sent him a message a couple of years ago and said, is this ever going to make Spotify? Like, I know it's pretty obscure, but, you know, can you just not whack it up in Spotify? And he's like, no. He's like, do you know how long it'd take me to get releases on all the samples that I used? It's like this is fucking a year's worth of work just to clear all the samples that I just ripped off in my bedroom back in 1999. So, and that reminded me of, I was trying to think, there was a, it was the Late Show DVD and some of the, how they couldn't put some of the sketches in and some of the sketches they had to put in with different tracks because they couldn't get clearance.
Yeah, the theme music had to get changed for the DVD and for the video. And also there were – I remember Tony Martin talking about it on the commentary. Like there were whole sketches they had to drop, like all the commercial Crime Stoppers stuff they couldn't use.
Yeah, because it was just – the music was just too important to the way that it worked as a joke.
Yeah, all of the Countdown Classic stuff they couldn't use. Even like things where like they had Russell Crowe guesting as Shirty the Slightly Aggressive Bear as his character from Romper Stomper. They couldn't use that because they would have had to get him to do a release for that. So,
well, just on that, there was a little interesting copyright story that dropped this week in that a whole heap of DJs have been doing live shows on Twitch and, you know, people pay to watch the live shows on Twitch. Probably very small amounts of money, but it is a revenue. And the record companies have just come down on it and basically said to Twitch, you need to find a way for us to get copyright off those shows or we're shutting the whole shebang down.
Yeah, we're coming for our fucking cut.
Yeah, so, and there was like a whole heap of, I sort of did a little dive into a Reddit thread, and they were basically saying, you know, the record companies are going to get 50%, Twitch is going to get 40%, and the DJs
are going to get fuck all.
Yeah, they're going to get fuck all, and like there was a sort of like, well, and
but having said that, the DJs are playing stuff from other artists, if some of that 50% makes their way back to the people who wrote the shit, that would be nice. Yeah,
and the general consensus was it won't. It, like the 50% will get eaten up by the record company and the artist.
It'll pay for your mate from EMI to still go and talk to the people from Austereo.
The artists will get nothing and the DJ will get nothing, but Twitch and the record companies will make out quite well. But it's interesting to see an old world sort of muscling in on – you know, it was a little bit like when the newspapers said to Facebook and Twitter, look, you have to pay us to use our news on your feeds and in your stuff. And they're like, well, no, we don't actually. You get fucked.
We're driving content to you pricks.
To you, that's right. So, yeah, that's another little interesting thing to watch. All right, Doc. Well, I will catch you in a couple of weeks. I will have six albums to listen to and comment on by that stage.
Well, you don't have to listen to the ones that Adam and I are listening to, but you're more than welcome to.
The Tyler one's not exactly piquing my interest. Let's put it that way.
I feel like that might be this is being inflicted on me by my children, so I'm going to inflict it on you cunts. That's the energy that I'm feeling from that one.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Doc. I'll catch you on the flip side.
All right. Cheers, man. Makes me violent. So violent.
I guess Adam's just really disappointed that he couldn't pick the Pearl Jam album that's out the week later.
I think, what are we going to do with that?
Ignore it.
Do we throw that in as a joke or 1 week just to clear it? Or are we just going to go, nah, that's not a thing that we're going to put in our ears, like Beyonce?
I don't know. I just have such a strong reaction to his voice. Like, you know, it's almost like a drug addict walking past a bloody fucking dispensary or something. I don't know. Like, I'm almost more interested in the Mark Knopfler album than the Pearl Jam album.
Oh, Jesus, no. Don't do these things to yourself.
Dude, you can play guitar.
A lot of people can. Tommy Emmanuel can play guitar. Tommy Emmanuel's
I'm surprised you didn't go for the Jebediah album.
I don't like Jebediah. I've never actually enjoyed a Jebediah album. But it is on my list of albums that exist.
Yeah.
But they're not a. I never really enjoyed Jebediah. I like the singles, you know. Yeah. And I've seen them play, you know, played Wandered Past the Odd Set at a home bake or something like that. But I've never owned one of their albums of Someday Shambles and fucking the other one and the one after that.
Do you reckon if you reverse the Bob Dylan album, went from finished to, you know, listen to it in the opposite order, you'd like it more?
I'd like it less, because then I'd be left with the fucking, you know, bitching about his fucking record label and whatever else. It's like, fuck it. It just struck such a discordant chord with his normal – he's usually so – I don't know, people, you know, people contain multitudes. But it's like he's usually so concerned about society and so concerned about the people and so concerned about big, serious, important shit. And now he's worried that he's been passed up for institutional industry awards.
What?
From a fucking an institution in an industry he doesn't fucking care about. What are you doing, bro? Yeah.
It sort of undermines the whole message, doesn't it?
It's like, I'm not going to say he's not my hero, but it's like when you get disappointed by your heroes, when they, you know, like your favorite footballer goes out and does an ad for some fucking gambling company or something. You think, oh, fucking hell, bro. Or Ant Edwards posts some homophobic bullshit on his Instagram, or someone comes out as an anti-vaxxer or something, and you think, fucking hell, man. Why? Why did you have to do that? And obviously he's nowhere near as bad as that, but because he holds us and himself to such a high standard, I was just so fucking unexpectedly poor.
Well, it's quite commercial.
Well, he's complaining that his shit isn't commercial enough. I'm like, have you looked at what you do, bro? What you do is never going to be commercial. That's the point. Commercial.
Yeah, that's right. If you want to talk about, you know, bitches and concealed guns,
he has a song called, you know, Get Yourself a Gun, which is also in that opening part of the album that I don't really enjoy.
Particularly like.
It's like fucking, with the gun crime, it's like fucking hell. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Anyway.
There was still some bangers though.
Oh fuck yeah! He's a Man is a brilliant song. It's as good as it's probably my second favorite Bob Dylan song of all time after Pretty Songs, and that might just be. And there are also some other songs on that album that just bang, but you know it's not as good as the first one. It's not competing against the first one for the album of the year, but it does get tiered against everything else, other stuff that he's done.
Yeah, it's probably enough to drag it out of, like, okay, something's going to have to – like, when that album dropped last year, it was like something has to beat this. You know, it's a little bit like –
22 it was, actually.
Someone has to beat Denver, you know. They're probably not going to lose it themselves. Someone actually has to go out and do something that is amazingly better to beat this album.
And the Bobby Lees did.
Yeah. But, yeah, this is not – that, I don't think.
Nah,
and maybe it'd be fascinating to know what sort of production, like whether it's all in-house, you know, whether he's got full control.
Well, they. Everything. Bobby Villain, which is the lead singer, he is listed as full, he's listed as the producer of it. Look, I think a lot of this album could have been on the last album. It's the parts that wouldn't have fitted on the last album that are the ones that are the most problematic to me, because it's like, this is your new direction, is it? To do Bad Kendrick and complain about shit. Complain about things that only matter to you.
It'll be interesting to see his next album, to see whether, because there'll definitely be someone that'll say that'll have a bit of a bitch about it. So
I think some people will observe it, like, you know, what happened to this fucking, you know, it's a bit like the second album by The Streets, you know, by Mike Skinner, where he suddenly went from talking about, you know, getting into fights at fucking kebab shops after being out in the piss to complaining that being rich and famous sucks because, you know, you can't do things anymore. It's like, you're not as relatable as you were, my brother.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was more of the same podcast.
All right.
We'll talk to you in a few weeks. Catch you later.
See ya.